If I told you half the things I've heard about this Jabba the Hutt, you'd probably shock me.
I'm here, Jabba.
Been waiting.
Hello, Blabber fans, and you are very welcome to our first episode of 2024.
The illustrious Jabba bids you welcome and will gladly pay you the reward of 25,000.
We know it's been a little while since you've heard from us, but our batteries are recharged and we're ready to go once again. In this episode, we had the chance to sit down with the one and only John Jackson Miller to chat about the upcoming release of Star Wars: The Living Force, which is available from all your usual outlets today. Thank you so much to our friends at Penguin Random House UK for the early access, and to John for agreeing to sit down with us. And so, without further ado, punch it, Chewie! Hello, John.
Hey, how are you doing?
Fantastic. It's nice to finally talk to you, not behind the table at a convention. So this is going to be a fun one. We'll get into the book in a little bit. But first of all, for those who maybe have been living under a rock or are pretty new to your work, could you tell us a little bit about your author's journey?
Well, I started reading, comics and writing my own comics when I was 6 years old, and writing my own stories on a typewriter. Age nine is when Star Wars came out, and that influenced a lot of what I did after that. I ended up going to journalism school later on, and editing my campus newspaper at university, and then got later on into editing magazines for the comic book business, both on the consumer side and on the retailer side. And it was through all of that that I met people at Marvel. That was where I got to write Iron Man for a year, and then Iron Man led to me meeting folks at Dark Horse Comics, and Dark Horse Comics is where I wrote the comic series that I'm probably best known for, which was Knights of the Old Republic. Knights of the Old Republic led to me doing more work for Lucasfilm and their other media, such as The Lost Tribe of the Sith short stories in prose, the Knight Errant novel and comics, which are actually now out again, both in new editions from Random House Worlds and Marvel, and then, of course, the Kenobi novel in 2013, yep. Which took a long journey from where it began, because it was going to be a comic book to begin with, and it turned out not to be. But that came out, and that led to me doing the new Dawn novel, the prequel to the Rebels TV series in 2014, and that sort of kicks off the Lucasfilm Story Group era of stories. Along the way, since then, I've continued working some short stories for Star Wars and some a novella for Star Wars, some comics for Star Wars, but mostly I've been doing novels for Star Trek. I did eight in a row, and then here we come upon the most recent novel, which of course is Star Wars: The Living Force.
And the cover is beautiful. And as I said, we'll get on to a bit. I'm just so sorry that my co-host Kate can't be here. She's a huge Trekkie as well. So for her, this one, and obviously you've got some memorabilia behind you there, which goes down well. Oh yeah. Yeah. We're crossing the streams, as we would say here, Trek and War. So it's all good.
Well, I did a Battlestar Galactica graphic novel for the 40th anniversary, the same year that I had a Star Wars and Star Trek project out. So I think I hit the trifecta, as we call it here, for 12-year-old me. That was covering
all your bases.
Yeah, exactly.
So one question that we always ask our authors in our interviews, and this is something that always fascinates me, how would you describe your writing process? Are you somebody who sort of knows the ending from the very beginning and reverse engineers the story around that? Or are you somebody who just completely starts afresh and builds towards the crescendo, if you like?
Well, of course, with these tie-in works, we have to start with an outline that is approved by the license holder. But outlining is generally the most difficult part for me, because what I see are the big moments. I see the scenes I want to see. I see the big events. I see the fight scenes. I see the personal confrontations. You know, the moments that I really want to get to, these peaks within the story. And then it's a matter of knitting them together in a way that, you know, makes sense logically for the story, but is also interesting for the characters, gives the characters purpose and things to do. And then, you know, as as really the manuscript starts, that's when I start to have fun, because that's when it all gels and knits together. And, you know, things like theme, you know, I might have a vague theme in mind at the beginning of a story, and yeah, I get to the end of it and I realize, this is entirely about loss, or this is entirely about revenge, or this is entirely about whatever it is. These are the themes that are popping up again and again. It comes about that way. So there's a lot that is structured about it. Obviously, with the Living Force, I have 12 Jedi Council members and Obi-Wan Kenobi and also Qui-Gon and the villains, to take care of. So I had to, very much structure how much they appeared and when they appeared and put that puzzle together of what they would do and when. But at the same time, a lot of it is organic. And, certainly the relationships between the Jedi counselors that we see on the page in The Living Force, those were really not present to the same degree in the outline as when I wrote it.
Well, that you've actually hit on a couple of things that I actually wanted to prod you on for some information. But before we get to the book itself, the one question I have to ask is, in your own words, what makes a John Jackson Miller book?
I think in part that sort of plotting, the dialogue is a big thing. The humor is a big thing. My secret is I'm a comedy writer, I think, doing this. I also try to, construct sort of these puzzles, a literal puzzle with one of my recent Star Trek novels that somebody was trying to solve. I want to have, mysteries that are engaging and that not everybody really knows the answers to, except as you go along. And, this is something that I think, goes back to my Knights of the Old Republic days, where I had, 5 years in which to write the story. And I was able to hide a traitor in the cast for 3 years. And people who got to that moment when it finally was revealed were, many of them had already known because the clues were there. And then the other people were able to go, wait, I have to go reread this entire series because it takes on a new meaning. They're not all like that. I've done some lighter stories that are not, do not have that level of construction to them. I think that, I want people to read one of my books and feel like, things that I've done are really thought through.
Well, touching on the book, I can say 100% it was very, very well thought through, and that it was quite a delicate balancing act, I would say. And speaking from my own personal point of view, being Irish, we are known for having a really dry sense of humor, and as we would say, taking the mick out of each other. And this book is full of humor. It was the one thing that surprised me above all else, just how much humor was in it. And it just kept coming, which was fantastic. But to start off our talk about it, how did the idea for the book actually come about? How did it come to be, if you like?
Well, we ended up having the Jedi Council a year before Star Wars: The Phantom Menace. We ended up having them only have a few minutes of screen time, so we didn't exactly know a whole lot about them. And then they would get elaborated upon in the Clone Wars and also sort of the other comics that were out there. And then some of them have been elaborated on kind of in retrospect with the High Republic more recently. What we wanted to do is do something that would actually sort of showcase them all, almost like, you have the Avengers as a team, you have the X-Men as a team, here is the Jedi Council as a team. I knew that you couldn't just do something where it's 12 people running around in a bus. It would be very difficult. Give them all screen time. The only place where these people are ever together all at once is in the council chamber. And as we see in the book, they're literally not all together anyway. And that's part of the problem because they've got so many jobs. They've got so many duties. They're all over the place. And so, while I was offered this opportunity, I said, well, what I want to do is I want to have Qui-Gon Jinn walk into the Jedi council chamber and basically call them out, say, you people need to get out of this room. You need to find out what you're missing, because this galaxy could turn on a dime. It could change quickly. It could absolutely transform and you wouldn't know it because you're all here, or you're embedded in your labors that are stuck on Coruscant. You have no idea what's out there. When was the last time you actually went out and helped an individual person as opposed to a whole planet or a civilization or something like that? And Mace Windu says, okay, challenge accepted. Let's go. And I constructed a story in which they visit a place that is very real to all of them, but has changed greatly.
Absolutely. And it was lovely to see those kind of steps back, I suppose, if we look at it, the council being brought down a peg or two and reminiscing more about their days when they were, I suppose, Jedi Knights, when they were more out in the field as opposed to where they are now and what they're doing. And tying into that then, what inspired the title? Was it, were you always set in stone regards to that, or were there a few options that you bounced around?
My editor, Tom Holler, had suggested one that he had wanted to do at some point. I'll keep that private because he may still use it one day. I looked at what was available, and I realized that, the Living Force, which obviously is the line that Qui-Gon says in The Phantom Menace, and which is central to the point of all of this, it had only really been used in Star Wars expanded universe material for a role-playing game campaign the Saga Edition, I believe it was, for Wizards of the Coast. There were a few pieces of short fiction actually co-written by a friend of mine from college 30-odd years ago. I didn't realize that until I looked it up. Just short stories that had been online with the Living Force in the subtitle somewhere. And I sought permission to use it, and it would have been my first choice from the beginning, and I'm happy that we got it.
It is completely apt. It makes perfect sense with it. But how different was your initial idea versus what became the final product? Because I remember when the book was first announced, and we actually spoke about this at Dublin Comic Con only a couple of weeks ago, as this being the one that we had on our radar, that this was the one that excited us most. This was not what I was anticipating at all. So I'm wondering how your initial idea was versus what became the final product.
It is almost exactly what I did.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was never going to be a situation where this was going to be a sprawling pan-galactic story where they were going to go all sorts of places. It was going to be a single planet, but it would be the focal point of a lot of fractures in that part of the galaxy. There are major changes happening in that part of the galaxy because of the corruption of the Republic, the corruption of the Senate, them pulling back from less favored trade lanes and favoring other ones. And also you have Palpatine in the background there, who is egging this sort of thing on because he's much happier when the Jedi are just moving around and not being very useful. The efficiency, the efficacy of these people in this region is so low that it is about to fall to pirates. It is about to fall to chaos, before they arrive. And then I constructed a situation where, that happens on their watch, and we see what they do about it. I don't believe, that it changed very much at all from what I started with.
That must have been such a good feeling to start with this initial vision and to carry it all the way through. I mean, when you talk about things like this, there can be so many rewrites, changes, adaptions, and it must have been just so good to feel that from start to finish you were able to put through basically your overall vision for the forest.
I think the one of the tricks with it is simply because we had so many characters. I cautioned everyone up the line that it was a very I don't want to say designed construct. It was a very constructed book in the sense that I had fixed it so that every major or rather every member of the Jedi Council got a certain number of pages, got a certain number of chapters, and that they met one another in a logical order. Sometimes alone, sometimes with one or two other people. And what I was concerned about is if you move a whole bunch of chapters from here to there, everything goes higgledy piggledy. So so we were able to keep that more or less as I had intended. But I am very happy that we were able to do what we did with it. The folks at Lucasfilm and Random House Worlds were able to suggest a few things that I added that tie it into the larger scheme of things. It is, again, very much something which depicts, the decline of the things. It is, I don't want to say it is the end of the High Republic, because that is up to them to say when that era ends. Mm-hmm. But it is very much the beginning of the end of what we see in the prequels.
And just the comment on the chapters, it does flow so well. It really does hit the nail on the head. But talking about that then, can you talk a little bit about the source material or what the inspiration was for some of the inspiration for what became the actual story?
We have in The Phantom Menace where Qui-Gon talks about be mindful of the living force. That is elaborated upon by Terry Brooks in the Phantom Menace adaptation, where he delineated the difference between the living force, which are the people around and about now, and what was then called the unifying force, which is the big and the wide and the future and everything, the big picture stuff. Later, I think it's been called the cosmic force. Or something like it has been called that. And I wanted Qui-Gon to sort of be the representative of this going into this book, that he was the one who was not on the council. He had refused to take a seat on the council. He was interacting with people as is expected of masters and students and knights. Mm-hmm. And he was going to be the one that was going to be out there kind of saying, all right, I'm seeing what's happening to the people who are the consequences, receiving the consequences of these big decisions that we're making to do these things. And the living force tells me to do this or not do this. And for me, this goes all the way back to The Empire Strikes Back, when Yoda and Obi-Wan Kenobi are telling Luke not to go help his friends because, in the big picture, it will, he won't solve anything. In the big picture, he may fail. In the big picture, he won't get to defeat Darth Vader that way. And of course, as we find out, he makes the right decision to go save his friends. Because if he hadn't gone, well, first of all, they wouldn't have escaped Darth Vader, because they wouldn't have had R2-D2. But also, by confronting his father when he did, he gets his hand injured and is able to look at that glove in Return of the Jedi when he's, confronting Vader and deciding, whether or not to take the final step and do what would, turn him to the dark side. I feel very much that the Force is got a bunch of different ideas, and the Force is kind of telling people a number of things at once, and there are streams of destiny or whatever that are coming from various parts of it. And very much Qui-Gon is concerned about the people here and now. And he is somebody who as Obi-Wan mocks, picks up useless life forms because he assumes that you never know what they might do one day.
Absolutely. And again, the way you've dovetailed with those two was fantastic. The relationship is phenomenal. But with it being the prequel era, what is it about that period of storytelling that we just seem to want more of, or just seems to, hit every aspect of Star Wars that we need, in whether it's a, an animated series and all, whatever the case may be?
Well, I think in part, Return of the Jedi, for those of us who were around, when it came out, very much was a punctuation mark. It very much was an ending. And so anything else that was going to come about afterward would be, New Republic, New Order, New Jedi, this or whatever. We had all those years, so many years after that, of wondering what was going on in the past, what had led up to these things. And we've got a lot of years, and there's a lot of years in there that still haven't been explored much at all. And it's a very big galaxy. And, you see in these 12 Jedi counselors, there are at least four that were active in the High Republic novels. So we're talking 200 years ago. So there must be a lot of stories to be told here. So I think that that is something that interests people. And for me, it is my first work in the prequel era. And that is after having, hopscotched all around the different parts of the timeline, hopped all about. I think that it is very much, for me, it was interesting to delve into the sort of the time when things are rotting and beginning to the signs of things going wrong are becoming very visible. I did a bit of that in the Knights of the Old Republic comics, but what was coming at them at that time, we had the Mandalorian Wars already begun, so it's just kind of a different dynamic. And so also here, another thing I got to delve into was a bit that deals with the birth of the Republic Navy. And that is something that I was always interested in. I was glad that I was able to take one of the character storylines and sort of fit it to an arc about that.
Well, from that then, this is probably the hardest question that I'm going to have to ask you, and excuse the pun, but how did you find perfect balance when trying to dovetail around all the members of the Jedi Council? Because you did it unbelievably well, and there were so many moments on it, but how did you find that balance effectively?
My feeling was that, even though I felt that the Jedi Council, before I wrote this book, most of my works, Knights of the Old Republic, Knight Errant, Kenobi, New Dawn, they were all about Jedi who were alone and cut off from the Jedi Order. And a lot of what I wrote was very much skeptical of the Jedi as a club, the Jedi as a group, the decisions that they made collectively. Mm-hmm. Certainly not my Knights of the Old Republic story with what happened to Zane Carrick. That is an indictment of the Jedi Council in that time frame. And what I wanted to do was show that this is not a monolithic body, even though it does behave in that way. Not to get too deeply into the studies of what happens in boardrooms or in governments, but there's a lot of groupthink that goes on where people will all agree on a set path, and silence is taken as consent or agreement, and people defending the way things have been because they can't visualize things changing in the future.
Yeah.
These are not simple executives. These are the wisest Jedi in the galaxy. So I presumed that, yes, several of them would have quite differing views of what's going on in the world. You know, we have characters like Yaddle and Depa Balaba and even Peele, who are much closer to Qui-Gon's point of view, I would say, in terms of you know, the Jedi needing to be a group that has more personal interactions with people. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, you know, sort of on the other pole of this, you've got, you know, traditionalists like Sazi Tin and Kiadi Mundi, who are a lot more of the notion that, yeah, we have very big jobs already. And one of the things that we do is we've got knights and Jedi to go out and handle these things. And then we've got people like, I think Mace is kind of in between, in the sense that he speaks for the council frequently. He tends to, you know, be lumped with the traditionalists. Yep. Because of where he sits. Mm-hmm. But that does not mean that he is, you know, this heartless person that doesn't care at the same time. So I wanted to kind of show that dynamic as well. So, yeah, we do have a number of different voices that come from this. I think that was my goal all along, is to, you know, show these characters as people. So you could more or less now, you know, you'll see them again and expect a certain point of view from each of them.
And there it is, from a certain point of view. My last question for you, and I had to keep it for last on this one, is, could we please just talk about this guy for a minute?
Okay, who do we have? We have Plo Koon.
My social media my social media tags are at Plo Cool, one of my favorite characters of all time. Could you tell me what it was like writing for Plo?
Okay, again, this is one of those cases where, you know, if I were to take, you know, simply him as he's been shown, and I did, because I in my research, I looked at, you know, other appearances, and, you know, we get here somebody who is very much a, you know, a leader, an organizer, a general, as we will later see, someone who is... you know, has, if anything, a dry wit, as opposed to, he's not a joker like Yarel Poof, for example. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to pair him up with somebody who was even more, you know, structured or uptight in terms of things than he. And so I have it with Sazi Tin, where, you know, he makes Plo Koon look like the relaxed and carefree one, as opposed to him. And, you know, I just enjoyed that dynamic, because they hadn't really been written together before that I was able to find much of. And, you know, if you do the math, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, pairings or trios that you could get out of this thing. And you know, with 12 people, you know, I chose to, you know, focus in on a handful of them that I found would be most interesting, and Plo was a part of it. And yeah, I feel that he gets one of the richer arcs in the book.
100%. Every chapter I love reading about him. I truly cannot wait for people to read the book, John. Genuinely can. But before we let you go, we have our segment where we do a couple of random Star Wars questions off the top of your head, whatever answer springs to mind.
Sure.
So obviously you are known for, as I said, probably the main one, the poster is behind you of Kenobi, but everyone has their Star Wars. And if you could tell any character story via any medium, who would it be?
Oh, well, any character from the movies or whatever. I you know, certainly one of the characters I haven't written yet is Lando. So that would be kind of fun.
That's an interesting choice. That would be a really nice one to see. Favorite Star Wars novels or writers? So who amongst your colleagues inspires you?
Not to get into the novelists, because so many of them are contemporaries, and I don't want to play favorites. I will say that Archie Goodwin, who wrote the Marvel Star Wars comics back in the day, David Michelinie, Joe Duffy, did the Marvel Star Wars comics. If not for them, writing those books, and then of course, I guess to go back early, Brian Daley, Alan Dean Foster in the beginning. If it were not for all of them, I would not be reading Star Wars comics and novels up to the point where, here I am, you're doing them.
Absolutely. And favorite Star Wars character, has that changed at all over the years, or have you got one that you will always be nailed onto?
Favorite character of my own that I've done would have been the Griff from the Knights of the Old Republic series. And again, I think within the movies, Lando has a bit of a griffness to him. So again, in a sense, I like the outsider who is neither, Jedi nor Sith nor Republic nor Empire. Somebody who's trying to make their way through this world, because that's what all of us are. We're visitors to this world. And
Absolutely.
if any of us were actually in that galaxy, it's likely that we wouldn't be part of one of these factions or another.
We would have our own story effectively. So since you, as you said, you were around when Star Wars, as you said, it was the exclamation point that it was out, but prequel era or original trilogy, and why?
Original trilogy, because I was there, I lived it, I had the toys, so I was it was a big deal.
That's as good an answer as I've heard with that. Now, if I could ask you to put your author hat back on again, or maybe it's just going to be your fan hat, we'll see. What can telling a story via pen and paper do that a big screen and VFX just can't?
You can get into some of these elements, like when I talk about how the Navy is developed, when I talk about a bit of the political intrigue of these things. I can get into the minds of the characters, see what they think about their galaxy. Even comic books don't really have what they call thought balloons anymore, where you see what people are thinking. So we can get into the internal lives of characters.
That is a big thing. Everybody reads something on a page and interprets it differently. And then finally, we would be remiss if we didn't ask somebody of your experience. What's the advice you would have for any young writers in this day and age?
I would write whatever I could, anywhere you could. Again, I told you I started as a journalist. I wrote for my high school newspaper. I wrote for my college newspaper. I did my own fanzines. The equivalent today would be, websites. I edited a line of magazines for the lumber industry at one point. So
Wow.
I was probably calling Ireland about their lumber business for our import export wood purchasing news was one of our magazines. Every one of those things taught me how to write for an audience, taught me how to actually hit deadlines, taught me how to actually meet the expectations and of people. And we don't always meet expectations. We don't always hit deadlines. We don't always, do what we need to do. But anything that gets people reading what you're writing and sort of experiencing the feeling of getting feedback on stuff, that is the key.
Great advice for any young writer. John, where can people keep up with your adventures? So as Facebook best, Twitter handles, which works best for you?
I have a lot of ways. JJM Faraway on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, TikTok. I am John Jackson Miller. And then my website is farawaypress.com. And I have essays there on most every story I have done, most every novel I have done.
John, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us, and can't wait for everyone to read the book.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, folks. Stay tuned for some upcoming episode releases. As always, feel free to get in touch with us at Blab of the Hutt on all our social media platforms. And of course, may the Force be with you.